Okay, welcome back. It's episode 6 of Meat for the Beast.
Meat for the Beast.
I'm Beastmaster Jim Connolly.
Beastmaster McVee.
And McVee's looking a bit rough today.
I felt better, Jim. I felt better. But it was worth it. Went to a Halloween party and ruined myself. But yeah, pretty good in the end. I'm all right. I'm here. Still alive.
Yeah.
I can still speak, so that's good.
It was Halloween last night. McVee was out partying. Yeah. I had to be a bit more sensible, but me and my little girl met a few trick or treaters, so that was good.
Very nice.
She looked a bit bemused by the ghosts and stuff coming to the door.
Yeah,
but she liked them. She waved at them.
What the fuck is this? Good on her. Happy post Halloween to everyone. Hope you all had a good one. We're gonna round up because the Batman. It's such a big topic. We've got overspill. So this isn't a Batman special, but we've got more stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk about normal other stuff.
So we ended it with thanks again to Hal for joining us on the last podcast.
The Grimsby Lantern. Big shout out.
I had hours of fun turning down his Unicron voice in the mix. Next time we'll have to sit him in the living room or something.
I think so, yeah. Do it over the phone.
We got on to the upcoming Zack Snyder Batman film.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think we covered everything in the movie verse except for that.
Yeah, yeah.
So we could go with that. Essentially, this element is really the future of the Bat on TV and on screen. So I think when we found out that it was going to be Snyder doing Batman and Superman, I think it was a wise move that they didn't decide to rebirth Batman again. I think it's good that they're throwing Batman into the Superman verse as an already established dude.
Yeah.
We don't need the backstory, everyone knows it. I'm good with where it's going. My doubts lying in the fact that it could be a too many cooks kind of thing, in that they're trying to kickstart the Justice League.
Yeah, they're trying to do Marvel now, aren't they?
Yeah, they're playing catch up big time, and I think they might lose, to be honest, especially with Marvel unveiling their new slate up until fucking 2020.
They've got a lot of catching up to do.
Yeah,
which you kind of think. I can't help thinking. Well, I suppose there is, like, if you don't read the comics, like when Batman and Superman get together, it's usually called World's Finest. Can't help thinking they would have been wiser to just call it that and. Off Wonder Woman, and it's going to have Aquaman in it as well.
Yeah, Cyborg as well, I think.
Right. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it'll work.
I think it's a bit weird. I think they're playing a different... I think they know they're playing catch-up, but they're playing a different game because they've got a lot of stuff on TV as well. They've got Gotham starting, they've got The Flash, they've got Arrow, which is doing ridiculously well.
Yeah.
I think they know that they've got to do something different. They can't just copy Marvel's idea. It'd be interesting to see where it goes. I was very chuffed to see that it was Affleck.
Yeah, I was hesitant at first, but a good back picture goes a long way, I think, and there's no denying he looks fucking ace in the suit. And also, like, when you actually look at the way they draw Bruce Wayne, especially say, like, when I first started reading, it was people like Jim Aparo. The way he drew Bruce Wayne does look just like fucking Affleck, so visually he's got it. And I wonder if, because the Nolan style was to go through the Bruce Wayne story, whether they're gonna stick more with Batman, if you know what I'm saying. Like,
I'd hope so.
Whether Bruce Wayne will become like more like your Keaton era, hardly see him as Bruce Wayne
really.
Apart from when he goes nuts.
You wanna get nuts? Let's go nuts.
So
yeah, I've got faith. Affleck, I've got a lot of time for Affleck, as anyone who knows me. I've had a man broner for Affleck for years. Daredevil, I think also this is nice, actually ties in nicely with Daredevil. Obviously Daredevil's got its naysayers, and it is a bit of a piece of shit film, but one thing it did nail was the casting. I thought Affleck was solid, and reading Kevin Smith's Guardian Devil, which came out in 98, 5 years before it, there's a foreword by Ben Affleck who just purports to be a massive Daredevil fan, and he was chuffed that his friend Kevin Smith got to write it. And I thought, I knew that going in to see Daredevil, and I thought, this, you know, regardless of what the end result is, this is a guy doing something, and it's, you know, he cares enough. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought Colin Farrell as Bullseye was perfect. I liked Michael Clarke Duncan as Kingpin, switching his race up.
Yeah, it was. That worked.
There was a lot of strong elements.
In terms of like swapping the race of a character, I don't think it's ever worked any better than that for me.
Yeah.
And no, I never heard anybody moan about it.
No, so, not at all. It's perfect.
Fair play. That guy's dead, isn't he? Now?
Yeah, he died last year, I think.
He's a fucking big guy.
Mm.
Hands like shovels.
I know. But yeah, Daredevil. To tie this in, Daredevil's coming to Netflix as part of Marvel's fucking taking over the world thing. They've got network TV with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and I think they're doing an Agent Carter TV show.
Yeah. Easy on the eye.
Exactly. but they're doing stuff on Netflix, and word is that Daredevil is going to be essentially a 13-hour movie, which is the way people watch Netflix stuff. Whenever like something like Hemlock Grove lands, it's not like an episode a week. It's all there for the taking.
Yeah,
so you can whip through it.
No, that's it.
I'm just very excited about Daredevil. It could be because they're on Netflix. They're not hamstrung by any kind of TV limitations in terms of what they can show.
So they can
effing this. And I don't think they need to, but it's going to be some heavy shit, I think.
I like the idea of a street-level hero.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's like... You know, like your hero flicks these days, everything's got to be very fucking epic, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And when you've got a TV budget, that's less achievable.
Mm.
It's sort of like the idea of Daredevil just busting a few fucking drug dealers and that kind of thing. I think that's going to work, and there's room for it now, I think. Especially seeing like that, there's that Wolverine film that got a bit of a bad press. It's a bit more.
Oh, I like Wolverine.
Yeah, I thought it was great. They kind of reeled it in a bit, and it was more just a kind of a detective style mystery.
Yeah.
And rather than Wolverine saves the fucking world.
Yes.
Again.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I got room. Yeah. Anyway,
if anyone's wondering why we're on about this, it's because the reason is that feel free to disagree, but you'd be incorrect. Daredevil is Marvel's Batman.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yeah,
he's badass. He's not got any qualms about busting some heads.
Yeah.
And in many ways he might be a bit more realistic than Batman because he's just a dude. Who's not loaded. I mean, he's a lawyer, but he's not as loaded as billionaire Bruce Wayne. So he's got to do stuff, with what he's got to hand, as opposed to having access to military-grade weaponry.
My main issue with the Daredevil flick was there's a bit where like Daredevil's supposed to be a good community-spirited lawyer, which sounds a bit sus from the start. But he's one of his clients who's paying him with like buckets of fish.
Yeah,
I'm thinking
pro bono work, man. Pro bono.
He's renting an office in kind of some area of New York. Devil's Kitchen, isn't it?
Hell's Kitchen.
Sorry. And so we're supposed to believe he's paying his fucking rent in fish. You know,
they're just scraping by, man. They're just scraping by. Have you seen the Daredevil director's cut?
No, it's
very good. It makes a lot more sense. It's better. Yeah. It's got an entire subplot involving him defending Coolio.
I thought it was Busta Rhymes.
And it gets rid of that terrible fireside love scene, which does ruin the first one. It's a far, far better film.
If a hero flicks in trouble, you know what else? What do you need to do? Just put Coolio in there. You're sorted.
That's what I'm hearing, man.
Well, yeah, back to Batman, right?
It's
good. Right, I noticed the new Batmobile looks very kind of styled towards the games we were talking about, the Arkham games, which I'm feeling pretty good about because I've been saying to years for you that the look and feel of those games for me is like the way a cinematic Batman could really, really work.
And I think this is the closest that we might get to it at this stage.
Yeah.
Because Snyder's stylish as hell, I think we've seen, I don't know if we actually mentioned this, but when the Comic-Con footage came out of him on the rooftop, I had my trousers off at the time I saw it, because otherwise those pants would be flying. That was just amazing, and the white eyes are...
Yeah.
It's perfect. From what I'm seeing, it's perfect.
So there seems to be. I mean, I think the chances we ever get Dark Knight Returns as a as a live action adventure are pretty limited, but yeah, it seems very styled towards it.
Well, we've had some this week they released some info, I think it was in Variety or something. Apparently there's going to be two Batmobiles, there's going to be two Bat outfits, one of which is the one we've already seen, the badass one with the white eyes.
Cool.
It's going to be kryptonite laced, ready for a ruckus. So
sweet. Yeah
yeah
you do what I presume I'm going to, because you question like how the fuck would he fight Superman, but I'm presuming if he has got some suit that levels the table like in Dark Knight Returns, and maybe injects some kind of something that'd slow down reality, like you're drugging Judge Dredd.
Yeah.
In Dredd, rather. Maybe he'd have more of a chance.
Yeah, I think.
Because on a level playing field, if Superman didn't have powers, he'd be fucked, wouldn't he?
Absolutely, yeah.
What's he going to do to Batman? But my money would still be on Superman, to be honest.
Yeah, same here. It is inconceivable that anyone could actually beat Superman.
Since Superman could probably be stood on the moon, take him out with one eye.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it'll be interesting. And I like Zack Snyder. People have got varied opinions on him, but like as a fan of Watchmen, you know, the book, I think he achieved the impossible. He made what could easily have been like an 8-hour series of films or whatever, or a TV show. It seemed to condense it nicely into, you know, a 3-hour flick.
Yeah,
which, you know, it was quite compact, but it certainly,
I didn't feel there's anything lacking in it. I know a lot of people had an issue with the end, but
I didn't mind that.
I didn't mind that because what the fuck's the end about anyway? Fucking shit, some shit brain monster from some other dimension. Fuck that.
H.P. Lovecraft wanking, wasn't it? Really?
Yeah.
I can live without it.
I'm absolutely good with that. Yeah, he nailed Watchmen, and he's got a good eye. And I think it could be to do with his subject matter. Like Sucker Punch was a piece of shit, but it looked lovely.
Right. Yeah.
I think no one can diss its visual appeal, but it was a piece of shit.
I saw half of it and nodded off. Not because that's no diss to the film. I was just watching it really late at night, and it looked pretty amazing. I watched it with my wife, and there was it's quite pervy, isn't it?
It is very pervy. Yeah,
she was a bit like, "What the fuck's this?"
Yeah.
Like one of them, the girl in it seems to often be wearing a short skirt and.
Yeah, I think
upskirt shots now and again.
I think it's very. I think there's certainly a Japanese influence on it. I've been watching a lot of anime recently, and there's a thing on Netflix called Kill La Kill, which is a schoolgirl with a superpowers uniform that turns into a badass. And I think on the opening credits, I think someone's taken the time to draw fucking labia. Like it's kind of like, this is a bit suspect, and there's a lot of people perving at her in the show, and it's a bit weird. And I think Sucker Punch has. Have you seen? What's it called? I think it's called. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's either Cassern or Cassern. It was kind of like a
live action manga-y type.
Yeah,
affair.
And I think Sucker Punch has got that vibe going for it.
Yeah.
So as I say, it looked lovely. There's a wicked moment where she, the lead girl, takes out a giant samurai robot and stands on it, and as it falls to the ground, Bjork's Army of Me kicks in, and it's a beautiful marriage of sound and visuals. Despite its shortcomings, Sucker Punch still shows that Zack Snyder has got a good eye, and I think there's, if nothing, to be fair, Man of Steel was a good looking movie. I thought it was pretty grey, but it looked good. I think it's in good hands, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, I've got no issues with Snyder. I mean, 300 as well was a good
yeah,
one.
But I mean, it overplayed the slow mo shit. I think if you watch that at normal speed, it's probably about 20 minutes long. But
yeah,
it was decent.
It was, and also, controversially, I quite enjoyed his Dawn of the Dead.
Oh, it's fine. It's perfectly fine, that.
I didn't mind it.
Yeah.
I personally find running zombies quite intimidating.
Yeah.
I'd rather be fleeing a slow walker, because they're not going to catch you.
Exactly, and then you can take a break, have a run, and then walk a bit.
Yeah,
if you got running zombies after you, you're
fucked.
Absolutely, yeah.
Linford Christie style.
Yeah.
So yeah, so I'm hopeful about the Snyder flick. I like what I've seen, and but we'll see how it pans out. One recommendation I've got. I was pretty dubious about Affleck, but one Affleck film where he plays quite a Bruce Wayne-y style character was Hollywoodland, where he's actually playing George Reeves or George Reeve. I'm not sure which one it is, but who is the '50s Superman? Is it?
Yeah,
'40s, '50s.
Dying mysterious circumstances.
Yeah, kind of quite a good murder mystery film, because you're not sure whether he tops himself or whether it was he was mixed up in all kinds of dodgy shenanigans.
Yeah.
So a little bit suspicious the way he died. So quite interesting.
Also, isn't Diane Lane in that?
Yeah.
So in this new film, essentially Bruce Wayne has nobbed Superman's mum.
Oh yeah. Ouch. Yeah, she seems to, because she's in the Stallone dreadfully.
Yeah, she's just Hershey.
As kind of a rookie character.
Yeah.
And then within about 5 years, she's playing grandmas.
It's weird.
Which I never really understood, because
she went from like youth to MILF without any middle ground.
Yeah, yeah. she's certainly a good actress, and she's still pretty good looking, I think.
Yes. Absolutely approve.
A few grey hairs down below.
Oh shit, son! Yeah, she'll be being dipped in wax, I reckon. A wax bath.
So yeah, we shall see how it pans out.
Yeah.
We were going to mention, going back to Sucker Punch. One of the actresses from Sucker Punch. What was her name?
Jenna Malone is rumored to be.
Carrie Kelly.
Carrie Kelly, yeah.
The Dark Knight Returns Robin. So.
Yeah. But I think that goes back to. I think I was good with it just being Batman and Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm worried that it's going to have too much going on. Like, I think this was the problem with Iron Man 2.
Right.
There's too many people in it. No one gets enough time to do what they really need to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And Iron Man 2 was essentially a fucking advert for the Avengers. And it's... Fuck Iron Man 2, it's awful.
I thought it was dog shit, man. And it was. I nearly walked out of it. I just thought... God, this is terrible.
I haven't got that far. Again, that's one of those compromise kind of, the studio says we've got to get this movie ready in 2 years, and the creative people are like, no, but I need 3. And I think Jon Favreau was kind of pushed into it.
Right.
Which is probably why he didn't do the third one, or get off of the third one. Because, yeah, it's a messy film, and I get the impression Marvel said, this Iron Man 2 has to have these ingredients. And he's like, are you having a laugh? I can't make a decent film with this shit. And so he did. Well, he made a film with it, but it wasn't decent. Bag of bollocks. So I worry that Dawn of Justice will have the same thing because of DC struggling to play catch up.
Yeah, yeah.
But we'll see.
We'll see how it goes. But in terms of live action Batman, Gotham,
yeah. Very excited about this. Mm-hmm. I've only seen the pilot episode. But I thought it was strong. I've got no beef with it at all. I know Bruce Wayne is essentially barely in it.
Yeah,
there's more Alfred than Bruce Wayne in it.
He's buying a flapjack from the tuck shop. And me too. I enjoyed it, especially like nice to see Sean Pertwee again.
Yes,
back on the scene,
definitely
as a kind of badass Alfred.
Yeah, and he's kind of channeling the Alfred from the. I think the one thing either you or Hal liked about Beware the Batman was the fact that Alfred in that was a badass.
The Earth One style Jeff Johns, is it?
I think so.
Hazy memories and guesswork again. Meet for the Beast.
Boom! Yeah, Alfred's clearly had a life of being a badass. It's nice to see. It's also nice to see live action Bullock. It was a bit more corrupt. He's kind of like Flass was in Batman Begins, I think.
Like
a little less greasy.
Because Bullock's kind of, he's like the chief Wiggum of Gotham, isn't he, really?
Yeah.
He's kind of Gordon's shadow from the earlier. Because does Bullock still show up in the comics now? Because I don't recall seeing him for absolutely ages.
I don't know.
I guess he will again now he's in Gotham.
I think so, yeah. And I think, Montoya is in Gotham as well, isn't she? Isn't she in the internal affairs team who were kind of chasing them down?
Yeah.
I think
Montoya's
part of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I did notice that. Yeah, I remember I was bigging up Broken City, and both those cops are in that.
Right.
So that's good to see.
It's a strong show. I've got a lot of time for Ben McKenzie, who has got Batman pedigree because he voiced Batman in Year One, the animated one.
Is he Gordon?
He's Gordon. Yeah.
That's where my issues come in. Actually,
I think give it time, man, because he. he was in the OC and he had not much to do in that. He was like one note character, but I think in Southland he's shown a depth of ability.
That's Cop Show, isn't it?
And I think he'll be fine. It's not my first choice. I don't know who my first choice would be for essentially a rookie Gordon, but it's better than it should be, I think, and that's all we can hope for.
I think I can live without. I know Gordon's not allowed to smoke anymore because smoking's bad for you kids and all that shit.
Yeah, don't smoke.
It's
not cool or anything.
I can even live without a tash because, you know, kids probably don't find tashes too cool.
No.
But could have at least given him some glasses. You know?
Yeah. I'm with you there.
So, yeah. I use the phrase Blue Peter presenter, which I know pissed you off. Because he looks like any second he could break out some.
Yeah,
he's good. A trip to such and such school in Essex.
He's a bit clean cut, isn't he? He doesn't look like he's had a hard paper round or anything.
Can you imagine Gordon living in like the equivalent of, you know, Spidey lives in Queens?
Yeah.
Imagine Gordon having a pad like that, and in the show, his pad looks like it cost a couple of million.
Yeah.
If it was in London.
Yeah.
So that seemed a bit weird.
Yeah.
It's like somewhere you'd want to live where, rather than what you could afford on it.
And you want some grimy shithole.
Yeah, and his wife looks like a supermodel, which is a bit weird.
I think, what's his name? The kid playing Cobblepot, he's quite good. He's got a freaky face, and there's something sinister about him.
Yeah, despite the fact he's slim, he's got a very penguin look about him.
Yeah.
Without any, I presume they've enhanced his nose slightly.
I don't know, man. I think that's his nose.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Right, okay. So, yeah, pretty well cast.
Yeah.
He's got a bit of a creepy air about him.
Definitely.
So, yeah, no, it's good to see. Like, I'm glad they went with that rather than just throwing the fucking Joker in episode one. You know, that would have been a bad move.
Definitely.
Should sit on the Joker till at least third season, I reckon.
Yeah, that would be nice. And I think one thing that I did read, because it's getting mixed reviews, but the people that are loving it are saying that it's almost becoming like a comic book version of The Wire in terms of you're seeing stuff from the cops level, you're seeing stuff from the criminals level, so your sympathies are you're not rooting for anyone in particular. The lines are blurred.
And of course, Falcone's Jimmy McNulty's old boss, isn't he?
God, yeah,
which is
dickhead. Yeah. So no, it's good.
I thought the music was too melodramatic.
Yeah,
it was like a Doctor Who score. Everything's like after like Hans Zimmer's scores, you'd think they'd have toned it down a bit.
Mm.
Maybe that's the point. Go a different way.
Yeah.
I think
Gotham as a city looks nice in it. It doesn't look like the real world of Chicago that Nolan Gotham was.
It's nice.
I think it's a nice in between style. It's good, and I've got high hopes for it.
Yeah, it's almost like if you took the Nolan sort of Gotham and the Anton Furst Gotham from Burton's Batman, it's somewhere in the middle.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Which I think would work for the film as well.
Yeah.
I like the idea for the new film if they do create a Gotham from scratch and pull it off. I think that could be pretty sweet.
Do you mean like in the way that he did, like he built like an entire New York City block for Watchmen? Do you mean like,
yeah, just kind of have, if they can make it not look like a sound studio or whatever.
I don't think Watchmen did, like the other bits with Rorschach walking up and down with his billboard, that was just out back somewhere in a set they'd made.
So
if you could do that, it'd be fine. I think as long as in Smallville, Smallville had a street, and it was used and reused so many times. It had like a curve, like an S bend in it, and it's like fucking hell, you're running down this same street again to denote Metropolis. Get a different set, or at least shoot it from a different angle. I'm sick of seeing this street, which is supposed to be different streets.
one fact I heard recently about Anton Furst, which is pretty really really sad, is because he did concept artwork for, you know, I said Gotham in the Burton flick, and he also did Company of Wolves.
Okay.
And I think he was involved in Full Metal Jacket as well. But Batman made him sort of super famous within that world.
Yeah.
And I don't think he could handle it, because within 2 years, he sunk into a deep depression, and his friends were basically trying to get him sectioned, I think this is the story anyway, and he went on top, they were about to drive him somewhere, and he jumped off the car park and died.
Fucking hell.
Which is fucking insane.
Really?
Yeah, seriously, yeah. And he just got into a real dark
state. I did not know that, man. That's awful.
Yeah, when you look at the stuff he created, you can see that there's some dark fucking clouds in his mind. But a really interesting guy. I was reading his Wikipedia recently, and it's well worth a peep.
Wow. I don't like that, Jim. I feel a bit
for a morbid note there, but thought it big up Anton first.
Yeah, well, yeah, good work, lad. Shit.
Yeah. So, sorry about that.
Let's lighten the tone with Batman music.
Hey.
There have been ups and downs throughout the years. I think as much as I dislike you two, Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me was a strong tune for Batman Forever.
Yeah, very decent track.
Yeah. What wasn't was Batman Returns. Was it Susie and the Banshees, or was it just Susie Sue?
Yeah, but basically I bought the kind of 80s and 90s Batman box set on Blu-ray a couple of years ago, and I trawled through the extras, and the U2 one wasn't on there.
Right.
The video. It was like, you twats, because it was a great video.
It was
like
good. It was very good.
A chap called David Milgate did a really nice animated vid, and he created Sinister Dexter, I think, for 2000 AD, and met him once. He was a nice, lovely chap.
Nice one, name dropping.
Yeah, it's like a name drop.
The beast moves in high circles, we'll have you know.
Anyway, and then I found a Suxy Sue video. Is that how you say it, Suxy Sue?
I think it might be Susie.
Okay,
Susie. Fuck it, it's shit anyway. So.
Yeah, and I was thinking, oh, right, she's this old punk figure. Maybe that'll be good. I never heard it, and put it on, and it was just fucking awful.
Yeah.
It was like this old woman kind of droning on.
I think it plays during there's like a ball in the film, and Selena and Bruce are dancing. And it's a bit of like foreplay-ish kind of banter, and I think that's playing during that scene. It's whack.
It's supposed to be Catwoman's theme, and it sounds more like fucking Bag Lady's Death March or something. I don't know. I guess my vote is the worst Batman-related music I've ever heard.
I'm with you there, man.
Nelson Riddle was a badass. The old diddle 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 diddle.
Of course. And of course, Prince.
Yeah, Prince.
Prince nailed that. Yeah. That's an unlikely thing, isn't it? If you think about it on paper, you've got a Burton gothic looking Batman movie. If she gets to soundtrack it, yeah, Prince doing some high end fruity numbers. I mean, it's good, it's enjoyable.
It works, it totally does work. Party Man is perfect for Nicholson's own Joker style dancing.
Absolutely.
Some sweet moves pulled in the Monarch Gallery, is it? No.
Flugelheim,
yeah.
Flugelheim.
Thinly veiled Guggenheim reference. One thing I thought of recently is that when you watch it again now, it's almost like kind of Prince and Danny Elfman are kind of almost having a bit of an oral tussle with each other. And like Elfman's very much the Batman score, Prince very much the Joker.
Yeah, I can see that.
Prince is very upbeat, kind of da 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 da. I've never owned the Batman, the Prince soundtrack. I want to get it.
I've got it somewhere. I'll hook you up.
Oh shit! Let's do it. I'll tell you what I did. And we had an Aussie decorator around to do the bits I couldn't reach.
Okay. Why don't you get a ladder?
Well, and we got some wallpaper in as well. Okay. Well, I could. It was on the above the stairs, and I would have probably died if I'd have tried to do it. But anyway, Aussie guy Rob was giving me a hard sell on Purple Rain because he was on about Prince, and I was like, I'm not sure about Prince.
Right.
So I went out and bought Purple Rain. It's fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
It's such a good album. And apparently he just scored the whole lot of it and plays most instruments on it.
Yeah, apparently he's a badass. I'd like to have seen Prince. I think he's worth seeing.
really a true definition of the phrase "all killer, no filler."
Cool
album, yeah,
good,
totally 80s gold, I reckon.
But I think for you and me both, the true highlight. Oh, hang on, no, hang on. There's another one. Bloody Batman and Robin.
Oh,
Smashing Pumpkins. Smashing Pumpkins. Did the end is the beginning is the end.
What a shit title, though.
Terrible title. Does not roll off the tongue well. But a strong kind of. It was between their. They'd just done, like. It was pre Adore, so it was between Melancholy. So they were still. I think it was them between the rock and the electronic element of Adore, and it was kind of. They were channeling a gothy sensibility, and I think it would have worked better if it was still Burton running things, because it was for Batman and Robin, which was just a big fucking fruity disco with nipples and bat credit cards and shit. if it was a good song for the wrong film, I think. But I think also, was it the same film that our favourite bat song is off?
Batman and Robin.
Yeah,
you're right. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
As a special treat to all friends of Meet for the Beast, we're going to pay allegiance to the wonder that is Gotham City by
R. Kelly.
R. Kelly.
We're going to get soulful for all our Bat brothers out there.
Exactly. You'll enjoy this. Not a lot, but we're going to give it our best shot. Yeah.
And we're going to flight copyright by performing it ourselves.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sorry, in case that wasn't clear, we are going to do it ourselves.
Here we go.
Shout out, enough respect.
Yeah, we killed it.
Alright, I think we all enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I know I did.
Tough one to follow.
I know. But I guess
sweet rhymes.
Absolutely. I think that marks the end of the our Batman lovage. Two and a half eps worth. And we still haven't skimmed the surface, really.
Yeah.
But I think we give it a good shot.
He's a big iceberg, Batman.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we rode the Titanic into him quite well.
I think so, and I think we crashed it calamitously with that fucking cover. But yeah, we did well, I think. High five, Jim.
Yeah, fucking
nice one. But yeah, thanks for listening thus far. we would shout out to our friends and followers. Thanks to Martin for chiming in with his love of Alex Ross and disrespect and suggestions for things we could do, because he said that it might be nice if we did a commentary.
Yeah, that's a good idea, actually.
I'll be up for that. I think, did you mention Dread, or did someone else mention Dread?
Yeah, I had another thought for a commentary, but yeah, it was good idea.
You might hear a downloadable Meet for the Beast commentary that you can slap on whilst watching your favourite film.
Yeah.
That would be quite, I think that'd be worth doing, actually.
I remember now, it was, I thought about maybe a Timothy Dalton Bond film.
Absolutely, yeah.
Maybe License to Kill.
A strong song, Gladys Knight. Yeah. I think Living Daylights is probably a better film.
It's a good film.
Either of those.
I'm up for either. So, yeah. Dalton's fine by me.
Future project. Noted.
Sounds good. Another shout out. We've been getting a lot of Facebook comments, so shout out to Martin Greaves, the Greavester. Cheers for all the nice feedback. And shout out to Brainwave Films, my mate Rob Richardson. Check out Brainwave Films. They're Rob and his mate have done lots of self-produced films worth a peep. And also Rob's an illustrator, does some great work. And his site's called One Fat Robot, I believe. OneFatRobot.com.
Cool.
So check out Rob. He's a talented chap. He does the same job as me, but he's kind of better, to be honest. So big up Rob.
I guess we might as well, seeing as we're shouting out, and this will link nicely into the next one, shout out to Rob Nevitt of Celluloid Screams for hooking the beast up with his horror fest last week, which is going to be our next port of call. It'll be in the season and all, Halloween and all. I spent last weekend in the cinema from Friday till 5:45 Monday morning. Lost half a stone in the process and watched a lot of stuff. But it was strong.
Okay, so recommendations from Solo Screams.
Solo Screams, I think the big thing for Rob to get involved with Manborg came out a few years ago, and it's made by this team of guys called Astron 6. Who clearly love horror and all sorts of jaunty shit like that, and they seem to start off by making little home movies, and they've just got bigger and bigger. They did Manborg, which was shot on green screen and took a while to make, and it's good, but it's not the best. Then they got involved with Troma. They did Father's Day, in which it's essentially a guy who goes around raping dads. Yeah, and there's a guy called Ahab who is on his tail.
I don't know how I feel about this being a dad, you know.
Well,
dad rape.
Watch Father's Day, you'll find out. Okay. Lock up your fathers. Celluloid Screams last week, they had the UK premiere of the guy's new film called The Editor, which is a love letter to the Giallo. I think someone said it was essentially if the makers of Airplane had remade Four Flies on Grey Velvet, you've got that. And it treads a nice line between pastiche and gentle mockery while still loving everything about it. It's all dubbed in the Italian style, so that it's in English and shot in English, but it looks like it's not, and it's got some nasty horror in it. And it's about an editor who was once a brilliant editor but lost his fingers, and now he's making schlocky movies, and he's the prime suspect in a series of killings.
Check that out.
And it's excellent. And got to talk to Adam of Astron 6. Lovely guys, they're Canadian, one thing that they're having trouble with is the fact that they're struggling to sell The Editor, I think, because it's not, the audience will find it, but in terms of humour and sensibilities, there's a lot in common with UK and Canada in terms of what they find funny. So it's a tricky sell for them, but it's a wonderful film. Got to talk to Adam about Trailer Park Boys as well.
Right, cool.
And that was quite nice, bit off topic, but it's good to know that there's a lot of love for Trailer Park Boys out there.
Yeah,
so shout out to Astron 6 and wonderful UK premiere of The Editor. I don't know when it's getting a proper release, but check it out.
What was the guy you met, the poster artist guy, what's his name again?
Graham Humphreys, he was there. He's done a wonderful poster for The Editor, and he's done loads of stuff. We'll have to spread some links about it. I didn't actually meet him, but it was only after the fact that I realised who he was. I was a bit too broken.
I should plug, I just reviewed a 6-issue comic series that he did the covers for, which looked fucking amazing, which was called Video Nasty, written by a chap called Mario Cavella, I believe.
Okay. Yes, I remember this.
Yeah, so have a peep at that. Have a peep at that.
Yeah, we'll spread some links on the Facebook page.
Yeah.
No, we won't. No, we won't.
We'll forget.
We'll forget, whatever. Find it out.
We'll try and remember.
But yeah. Another highlight was a film by Jermaine Clement of Flight of the Conchords and Taika Waititi, who made Eagle vs. Shark.
Right.
And it's called What We Do in the Shadows, and it's a mock documentary about four vampires who are housemates and the everyday issues that they have to deal with, such as doing the dishes and all sorts of stuff. It won the Audience Award for Best Film. It's very funny. I think it's coming out in February. Keep an eye on that. It's hilarious.
It looks good. I saw the trailer. Looks good.
And you won't think the same way about a sandwich after watching this. It's very good.
Reminded me a bit of there's a comic series called Blood Blokes,
right?
By a Manchester guy called Adam Cadwell. And I've been getting into that a bit. He's kind of puts about one issue out a year because you know he's doing the full time gig and all that. But it's quite good. It's quite interesting. I've got to issue 3 or 4 now. So yeah, Blood Blokes, worth a peep.
Sounds good.
Uh-huh.
The mundanity of being a vampire. I imagine there's a lot of things you don't consider. I think one thing that they have an issue with is, like, obviously they can't see the reflection in a mirror, so they don't know, they can't really look at their dress sense and see whether it's any good. So there's a nice piece where they're all kind of drawing pictures of each other. It's like, yeah, you look like this. All right, nice one. Oh, it's great. But it's good, and also it's quite interesting. I think the Kiwi New Zealandish sense of humour again has a lot in common with British sensibilities, and I think we get it a bit more than perhaps maybe an American audience might.
Yeah.
It's very good.
So some good recommended Halloween viewing and reading there.
Yes, absolutely. I've still got a bit more to talk about though.
Okay, go for it.
Doesn't
involve Transformers, does it?
No Transformers. We're still on the celluloid screens, man. A few years ago at the fest, pair of filmmakers brought a film called Resolution there, and it's not really a horror, but it kind of is. Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead, two nice guys who very charismatic, and they just brought this little indie film, and it was good. It was unsettling, and their new film. Yeah. They brought their new film this year. It's called Spring, and it's about a guy who his mum's died, and the cops are after him in America, so he flees to Europe, and just has a bit of a break. Falls for this girl, but something isn't quite right. It's essentially, it feels like a Richard Linklater film, like a kind of Before Sunrise kind of thing, just a dude and a girl.
Pretentious crap.
No, but it's, oh, you dick. But this is not that. It goes somewhere else, and it's got a lot of art. It's that and the editor are the ones that stuck with me. And even as Spring came to a close, I was on the, if it had gone on a beat longer, I would have been filling up. It's heartfelt stuff. And it's good.
I did like his take, the Richard Linklater Scanner Darkly. That gets a watch from me now and again.
It's good, man. It's
visually pretty stunning.
It is.
Harking back to Resolution, I think if they ever make a film about the band Nirvana, they should. The druggy guy in Resolution would make a very good Chris Novoselic. It's like a sort of Novoselic doppelganger, I thought.
Definitely. Do you like Resolution?
It's growing on me. I'd like everybody bigging it up, so I had high expectations.
Okay.
I wasn't expecting it to be quite as low budget and restrained.
Okay.
I was kind of expecting a bloodbath, and it's more of a thinker, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
It's almost more of a thriller, really, than a horror.
Yeah.
It's kind of a horror. I don't know if there's a middle ground there, but
I think that's what's interesting. Fuck you, dog.
Dog doesn't like Resolution.
Dog's a dick.
The dog can smell some burgers. Got some burgers cooking in the other room.
So yeah, both Resolution and Spring, they're both like, they look, they're indie films.
Yeah.
And they get played at horror festivals, but they're not, to a degree, they're not really horror films. There's just something a bit more, like Resolution I think is particularly creepy, whereas Spring is more of an indie, it's more of a romance, but with a horrific element. I think they're Benson and Moorhead, I think they're ones to keep an eye on. I think they're making they're kind of almost making their own genre out of this kind of stuff, and okay. and it's better than doing the same old shit.
It's something
fresh. So it's good, and more power to their elbow. I can't wait for Spring to get a release, and I can't wait for the editor to get a release. So that was good.
Good stuff. So it sounds like it was a good weekend.
It was good. And one final thing. With each film, Rob shows shorts. There's loads of short films over the weekend.
Shows men in shorts.
Shows men in shorts. Yeah, men in shorts and many shorts. A Scottish filmmaker, Andy Stewart, he brought two of his films. One of them, I think, was a premiere for this film called Ink, which is just a... And it's just nasty.
Andrew Stewart's a good Scottish name, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. You don't fuck with a guy called Andrew Stewart.
No, you don't.
You're gonna wake up to find a tribe in the bedroom at 3 a.m.
Yeah. Wait till you see his films. He did a film called Dysmorphia a while ago, which became notorious for making people ill. I know when it screened at the showroom, a woman had to be escorted out. So fair play to that. But I watched his film Ink. And it's about a guy who has essentially tattoo envy and a Stanley knife. So that's where it's going to go. But there's a bit in it that I was on the front row and I was just wincing in my seat. And I said to him, I think I shouted fuck off at the screen because it was just, oh, you dirty bastard. But wonderful stuff. Very, very grim and quite very strong. So shout out to Andy and his guys, Remo and Gordy, who were there. So nice to meet you guys, and look forward to what else is coming from the fucking the hellish mind that they have.
After Bob Over next year, or I've still not been to the Grimfest festival. Grimfest. I go to the odd Grim Up North event in Manchester, but I've never been to their festival.
Of course,
great crap for me.
I just realised since. Between podcasts, Goblin brought Suspiria to Grimfest.
Oh man, we're gonna go there.
We're gonna go there, Jim.
Yeah, we had this big plan. McVeigh was kind enough to get me a ticket for the start of Grimfest, which is like the Manchester Horror Festival. There was a live event where the band who scored Dawn of the Dead as well, didn't they?
They did, yeah.
Dawn of the Dead and Suspiria did a live score. Over both films.
They didn't do Dawn of the Dead.
Did they not?
They just played the film.
Okay, sure.
They were just watching the film.
Yeah.
But yeah, Suspiria. With, I think half of the impact of Suspiria is the sound, and having it done there in person was just quite impressive.
Yeah.
And I was also like, obviously you couldn't make it, but you sent. You sent your brother-in-law along in your stead.
Sweet Steve.
Sweet Steve.
My ticket.
What's sweet about him?
The first time I've ever seen that fucker happy. I've ever heard him sound happy about anything. Basically, Burger King in...
You don't have to go down there.
I had to go to a meeting in Sheffield with an old colleague, Ryan, who was kind enough to get me a bit of work. And en route, I got a Burger King... It was a bacon double cheeseburger, and I had to do the scumbag thing of eating it on the fucking train, so I ate it dead quick, which might have partly caused it. If guts didn't feel right all day. The following day, walked the dog.
You don't have to do this, man.
Shat my trousers.
Oh, no!
Shat myself on the dog walk, which was...
Are you sure it's a burger?
A personal low.
It's a personal low for me as your friend,
and it wasn't good. It wasn't just like a bit. It was trouser central. If you took a full box of Weetabix, put it in a bucket with 2 pints of water, that was what was in my trousers. So Goblin was the following day, and I still felt queasy, and there was no fucking way I was going to shit myself in a cinema. So yeah,
I'm glad you didn't, man.
But Steve was certainly happy about it all.
I think that was the first time Steve had seen Suspiria.
Really?
Yeah, right. he hadn't seen it before. And
do you know what? I haven't even seen it.
Have you not?
Yeah.
I'll lend it to you.
This is yet another case of us not knowing some obvious shit.
Collectively though, I think we bring enough to the table that we covered all the bases.
night, so it's still the horror season. It's also time for another tune, so I thought it'd make sense to dish one out by some professionals, just so you don't get to listen to us all the friggin' time. Continuing the shout-out to Cellular Screams, we thought it made sense to serve up a musical link that kind of was linked to that in some way. And one film we showed on the all-nighter was it's kind of like a short film, but also a long music video, really. About half an hour long. It's called Night Satan and the Loop to Doom. Night Satan are actually a band from Finland, and they're dishing out laser metal, which is essentially like heavy 80s style synth. And, well, you know the stuff if you listen to the likes of Kavinsky, a Power Glove, that kind of caper. The band play themselves, and it's this kind of, they're set on this futuristic planet. It's a post-apocalyptic world where this transvestite is going around laying eggs and imprisoning women in sonic loops, and Night Satan are having none of it, so they dish out their instruments and put a stop to his nefarious ways. Threaded authenticity as a doff of the cap to Italian post-apocalyptic films from the 80s. It was actually shot in English and then dubbed into Italian, despite the guys being Finnish, so that was pretty cool. It's a cracking piece, really, and soundtrack's available on Svart Records, and I'd just like to say a big thanks to Kritzu, the director of the film, as well as Night Satan themselves, for giving us a thumbs up to play this. So we'll get some links on the Facebook page so you can check it out yourself. In the meantime, this is Loops of Doom, end credits by Night Satan.
Strong work there.
Yeah,
I'm digging that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess final chunk of the show, talk about stuff we've seen recently. A big one for me was Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
When they released the images from it, people were like, what the fuck, Michael Bay's not content with ruining Transformers, he's got to ruin this. And to those guys, I say, fuck you.
We can't escape Michael Bay, can we?
We can't. But I think the animosity was misplaced, because no one says shit about Spielberg regarding Transformers, and that's the role that Michael Bay played in this Ninja Turtles.
Okay,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up.
It does look good.
It looks good. I think what's most impressive about it is the fact that it's not shit. Megan Fox has got rid of the trout pout and put a bit of weight on, and actually looks like a reasonable woman, and is quite good. She's actually quite good in it as April.
Yeah.
The turtles themselves, they've nailed them. The personalities are spot on. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun. I watched it whilst hungover, and it is prime hangover viewing. It's entertaining. It's proper eye candy. Cool. I can't wait for it to come out on Blu-ray, because I'll be buying the shit out of it.
Is Raphael badass in it?
Well, I think Raphael's your favourite, isn't he?
And yeah, he's the cool maverick.
He's the dick.
I can associate with that. He's the rogue.
Well, he is, but to me, he's the same dick he always is. Like I say, they've nailed it. Mm. Donatello is geeky, and Donatello wears glasses, which I think is a nice touch. He's got like thick lenses.
Yeah.
And I think there's a bit of a, like, they've obviously changed some things. There was a bit of a leak about them being aliens. None of that shit. But the origin is a little bit tweaked with.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, I think I'd liken it to the way that, you know how like when Man of Steel came out, we didn't spend the first hour of the film seeing how he became Superman, him in Smallville dicking about. It was just like flashbacks periodically.
Yeah.
Because I think it was enough. Everyone seems to like know the tale. And I think with Ninja Turtles, there's enough of a kind of, everyone knows the origin, we don't need to fucking spend half an hour doing it. So it's very glossed over. And
Does it have Splinter training his rat cage like the original film?
Unfortunately, no. And the biggest gripe folk have, and it's not a spoiler, but essentially they he trains them ninjutsu from a book he found,
lying
in the sewer,
right?
because he knew they'd have to take care of themselves.
Yeah.
But Splinter's well done. Shredder is the only kind of obvious Michael Bay injection, because Shredder is pimp as fuck.
Yeah, he looks pretty good though.
Yeah, he's a bit Silver Samurai-ish. So I think, again, going back to the origin, there's no historical beef between Splinter and Shredder.
Mm-hmm.
But all in all, it's a damn fun, entertaining movie. It looks the business, and it delivered for me as a Turtles fan. Yeah. And I'm going to say I enjoyed it more than Transformers 4, which I watched twice.
Right.
Okay. So that's the level we're playing at here.
Yeah.
In terms of my sensibilities.
Because of course the Turtles, I was always torn between the leader and the Maverick, whereas McVeigh was...
It's Donatello.
Was more torn between the idiot and the nobody.
The thinker. Fuck you, Donatello. Donatello's not a nobody. Donatello...
With the fucking stick.
The one with the stick, yeah.
The one poking turds down the drain.
Man with the stick. It's on the end of your stick, Don. Michelangelo's funny as hell in it. It's good. I think they got the guys, like the guys who did the mocap for it, did the voices.
Yeah.
But I feel bad for the guy who did Leonardo, because in post, he got his voice got replaced by fucking Johnny Knoxville for no reason whatsoever.
Oh, right, okay.
Bit of a waste, yeah, I think. Yeah. I don't dislike Johnny Knoxville, but he brought nothing to it.
Yeah, I can't really see him as a turtle.
Yeah. And if anyone, I'd say more Michelangelo. Leonardo. But
good. I did not mention it on here, but a good documentary on Netflix.
It's wicked.
Did you see it? Yeah,
yeah, I did. Yeah, I
really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was. I found it quite moving.
Should we tell them what we're talking about?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I forgot what it's called. It's like, I can't remember the title, but if you just put Ninja Turtles on Netflix, it's one of two things that I think comes up.
It's a kind of Turtles origin. Basically, like is it Kevin Eastman and
Peter Laird,
yeah, how they got together and how it was all a bit of an accident by the sound of it.
Yeah.
They were basically doing almost a piss take of Jack Kirby's Marvel era.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think they even said that they've lifted a load from Daredevil. Instead of the hand, they've got the Foot Clan, and instead of stick, you've got Splinter.
And they genuinely thought it was just going to be a one-off comic for you know, kind of almost parody purposes.
Yeah.
And they'd even kill Shredder at the end of the first issue.
Yeah.
And then it sold some, at the time, what was a huge amount for them was like 3,000 issues. And then they got a second print and shifted something crazy like 50,000 issues, something like that.
Yeah.
And it all kind of stemmed from there, and it got other artists involved, and how they got all the toy deals came about, which is where it really kicked off by the sound of it.
I think so, yeah. But it's a cracking documentary, and I think it smells like it's a crowdfunded one. And there's a lot of those appearing on Netflix, but this one, I think it was just really interesting. Like, I didn't know, I knew who made it, but I didn't know who the guys were, and it was weird, like, because I don't know which one was which, but let's say, I think it was Kevin Eastman, it was the younger one, didn't he write, he wrote a letter to Peter Laird saying, I love your stuff, I'm an artist too, it'd be nice to collaborate on something. It's just nice how it kind of spitballed out of being a fan of someone else, and you come up with this multi-million extravaganza.
Yeah, it was kind of, I never realised what a kind of DIY beginnings it had. I assumed that they already had a foot in the door with somebody pretty big publishing wise, and it was going to do well because they were already well established, but seems to be the case that it was a bit out of the blue kind of thing. Just very quickly built a following, and from a certain, you know, kind of people like us, I guess. But we were too young at the time. It was like, I think it was the first issue, it was 85 or something
like that. Yeah.
So very interesting. Check it out. And it ends a bit too soon, because it just goes into the original film, and then it kind of tails off a bit.
Yeah, it doesn't mention much about the cartoons in the 2000s, and nothing much about TMNT, which I thought was a decent movie, actually. Probably the second best Ninja Turtles film.
Yeah, yeah, I enjoyed it, yeah.
And doesn't mention the Nickelodeon cartoon, which is also thoroughly watchable.
Yeah, you've got a few of the figures.
I have, I've got them all.
Yeah.
I got Donatello first, because he's the best.
Well, I remember you saying you didn't want to buy... didn't want to buy Splinter because he's a lazy rat. never leaves the sewer.
Exactly. It's fuck all. Just
work shy bastard.
Yeah. I'd rather buy frigging Baxter Stockman or whatever. But yeah, Ninja Turtles. A lot of love from the Beast for the Turtles.
Cool.
Love it. All right. Another thing that I saw recently, The Equalizer, which was a show that I was very fond of. Well, in my mind's eye, I was fond of it. I was like five or whatever, but I remember it was on after news at 10. It had the most menacing intro sequence.
Oh, I certainly remember that. Yeah,
yeah, with a strong Stuart Copeland of the Police theme tune. It's wicked. And I recently, well, not say recently, I bought the box set of the first series, and it's quite dark, but it's good. If anyone doesn't know The Equalizer, it's a ex Special Forces dude who essentially is really like a one man A team. If you can find him, no one else can help. He will help you. Yeah. So the film with Denzel Washington dishing out some prime man on fire style badassery, directed by Antoine Fuqua, who did Training Day and White House Down? No, what's the other one? White House Down came out at the same time as another film that was exactly the same.
Okay.
Die Hard in the White House, basically.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Olympus Has Fallen. Yeah, okay. I know that strong action. I think Antoine Fuqua is filling the gap left by Tony Scott in terms of stylish action stuff. Okay,
that's good.
And The Equalizer movie, it's good. It's a little long, but when he dishes out the vengeance, it's righteous and it's good. It's really, really good. But I think my biggest beef is that they missed the trick by not reappropriating or updating the Stuart Copeland theme. Just a doff of the cap to the 80s TV show would have been nice. Okay.
Yeah, they don't like doing that anymore, do they?
No, like the A-Team did it. I don't know what your thoughts are on the A-Team movie, but I thought it was mint. Joe Carnahan can dish out Joe Carnahan hasn't made a shit film for my money. He did Narc, he did The Grey, Smoking Aces.
Oh, right, yeah.
I think he's probably, to be fair actually, he's got a good Tony Scottish action vibe going on. But the A-Team, I thought, was... There's nothing wrong with the A-Team whatsoever. I think
just B.A. I thought B.A. was a bit pussified.
It wasn't as big as he should have been.
They didn't call him B.A. either, did they? They gave him, like, a different name. It's like...
Bosco. I guess that's his name.
Yeah, well, why not just call him B.A.?
Yeah.
But Mr. T is a tough act to follow, isn't he?
Yeah, I always wanted it to be Ice Cube. I think
he could have pulled that off, you know.
Yeah,
he would have... I don't know why he did think. Maybe he just didn't want to risk fucking it up.
I think when it was prior to Joe Carnahan taking on it, I think it was going to be directed by John Singleton, who did Boys in the Hood.
Right.
So he's got the, I think that's where the Ice Cube link came from. I think it was talked about
because Cube's got the right kind of grizzled, angry look about him, hasn't
he? I think his face
I've
is
been evil.
Exactly. His default, the when he's like pulling no expression, he still looks like he's pissed off, just fucking furious. And
I saw a great, I don't know how I found it, but on Google Images, I saw a picture. There was a picture of Mr. T looking kind of a bit pensive, not kind of his usual sort of angry, you know, condescending face.
Yeah,
it's kind of just kind of. Just a mellow kind of look, and under it it just said fools ... I pity them. Pretty beautiful.
Nice. But yeah, I think that, like, there's some good rehashes of like old TV shows that are updated, and I think it's just okay, because it depends who's responsible for it. Like, we spoke about Miami Vice in the past. The reason that probably didn't do well is because people expected it to be like Starsky and Hutch, like a piss take. Because people think of Miami Vice, they think of like espadrilles and a fucking pet alligator, and it's all neon and stuff. And I think people
espadrilles.
They are espadrilles, I think, aren't they?
Yeah.
I guess people these days wear.
I think Vic Reeves is the only other person I've heard use that word.
So I think for every crap one, there's a few good ones, or the other way around, maybe. I think Equalizer, The A-Team, Miami Vice, all strong movies.
Bet you're a big Dukes of Hazzard remake fan, aren't you?
Not at all. There you go. See, Dukes of Hazzard, Starsky and Hutch. Fuck off. Drivel.
Yeah, in a sense. I just hope they never fucking do it with Dirty Harry. That would be so shit.
Yeah.
Who the fuck would play Dirty Harry? Well, you could argue in some ways.
Tom Hardy.
In some ways, I look at Dredd as almost a Dirty Harry remake. It's got you can totally see John Wagner's initial vision for Dredd was basically he's Dirty Harry in the future.
Yeah,
and that was very
fascist
clear
cop
in the film. I thought.
Yeah, definitely.
A bit of a dickhead.
Yeah,
basically, lovable dickhead.
Definitely. but yeah, have we got anything else? Have you been to the cinema? Or are you still busy mopping up poo? washing your pants?
I've been so fucking busy. I really wanted to see Dracula Untold, I think it's called.
Oh yeah,
that looks pretty good to me, because it was like a Dracula origin, and they've almost kind of done a bit of a Lord of the Rings-y superhero-y kind of pre-vamp Dracula phase.
Yeah,
towards the end, I think he becomes badass Dracula.
I think I've heard that it's essentially the first 15 minutes of Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula as an entire film, which is fine. I'd watch that. I think it's Luke Evans who plays him, and he's going to be the Crow in the new Crow film.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is moving. I think it's going into production next year, and James O'Barr, who created the Crow. He's keen to point out that this is not a remake, this is another telling of that tale.
I think you could.
Which is fine for me.
I think you could do that with The Crow, because from what I've seen the comic, the film's is quite different. The original film, anyway, it's similar, but it's not like a straight take on the comic.
No, it's not.
So I know that there's a lot of versions of The Crow, isn't there, as well? Like it seems to vary a fair bit visually, certainly.
Yeah.
So yeah, I could see that. I do love. I like The Crow. Crow's a weird one, because when it came out, it got nothing but love of everybody. And whenever I mention it now, it just gets a lot of grief. And I don't know what that's all about.
Do you think that's because it's been diminished by? Excuse me, diminished by like the sequels, which are shit. I tried watching City of Angels the other night, and it's dog shit.
Yeah, it's basically the same film, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah, I mean. I think,
and the other sequel, I've seen them all.
Yeah.
They get worse. The last one, what's it called? I think it's called Wicked Prayer. It's got Edward Furlong as the Crow.
Okay.
It's got Dennis Hopper as a fucking voodoo pimp in it. It's insane. It's got the guy who plays Angel, David Boreanaz, as one of like the four horsemen. It's shit as fuck.
Yeah,
straight to video nonsense. That's... And I think that's the annoying thing. Those are the things that are fresher in people's heads. But like The Crow is 20 years old this year.
Fucking hell. I remember it was the first 18 I saw at the cinema.
Nice.
I was only 16, I think. And it was another case of, with Terminator 2, my lies got me and a couple of friends in. to see it on the cinema.
Right.
And it was the second, exactly. It was like reliving that experience a couple of years later. It was with The Crow. It was great. I really enjoyed it. And I really liked the bit. There's a bit where there's a punch up in a nightclub, which ends in Brandon Lee's Crow kicking some guy on an office chair. He goes through a window inside the nightclub and nearly lands on the band, who are Nine Inch Nails, who have just been playing some fucking real nice bit of some thrashy rock tune, and they're all like, fuck, let's get the fuck out of it. So I thought that was a really nice touch. You know, I've never been like a huge, you know, I don't know a great deal about Nine Inch Nails, but that was a decent soundtrack as I recall.
That's a wicked album.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think anyone worried about the new Crow film, I think it's in safe hands. James O'Barr is I think he's keen to have control, and he's keen for it to be pushed away from the Brandon Lee one, because Brandon Lee was his friend and he doesn't want to ruin that legacy.
Fair play.
So I think I think one thing that he said, like, the, you know, there's a Bela Lugosi Dracula and there's Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula. They're the same fucking story, but told by different people. So let's go with it.
I remember my mum, I put a poster of Brandon Lee on my bedroom wall. My mum wasn't very impressed because it was just after he died.
Right.
I think she thought it had encouraged me to worship the devil and commit suicide. So a great bit of thinking on, great rational bit of thinking on my mum's part. He didn't even commit suicide, did he?
No.
It was a complete accident.
Is that some Catholic fear coming out there?
Yeah, probably. Bit like, what was that thing your dad about? Your dad thought aliens were coming through the telly.
Yeah, he wouldn't let us have Sky TV because he didn't like the notion of having a satellite dish on the house. As soon as 9X installed cable underground, that was all right. We'll have that.
I had another great bit of logic from my mum was I was about to go to my cousin's wedding in Dublin. And I wasn't going to wear these to the wedding, but I cut off some jeans because it was quite a hot summer.
And nice.
poured bleach on them, and it had this. It looked like a kind of some sort of denim cow or something, a denim cow pattern.
Right.
And my mum was pretty unimpressed when she saw them. She thought I'd kind of embarrass. I wasn't going to fucking shop in the wedding in them. But and my mum had all these reasons why I shouldn't wear them, and one of them was that the people at Dublin Airport would think I'm in the IRA. It's fucking the IRA uniform, apparently, is cut off bleached denim jeans. Well, it doesn't even make any sense, because even if it was, why would people at Dublin give a shit? Because the IRA is not exactly going to bomb O'Connell Street or something.
That's true.
Bomb the streets it fought for.
And I feel like we can make jokes about the Irish, as we have Irish heritage.
They're
our people. So whatever.
All
right, I think, are we done?
I think I should. I'm off soon to Friends of Batman, second shot at supporting Bob Logg.
Oh yeah,
because that's the first time got ruined by a car accident I was in, but we're back in full force, so scooting off now to go and give Bob some support. So
good.
It should be good, hopefully.
Yeah.
Playing at Corporation, home of champions. So yeah, till next time.
All right, thanks for listening, and we'll be back at some point in the future.
I think we need to give the beast
some what?
Some of his meat.
Oh yeah, of course.
Give him his meat.